Good evening. This is Michelle.
Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio Show. Our special guest this evening is Ms. Monique Wells, co-founder of Discover Paris, a black-owned tourism services company based in Paris, France. Ms. Wells is also an author and lecturer. Are you with me, Monique?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good evening. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm well and very excited about having this conversation with you tonight.
Yeah, me too.
I think I want to tell our guests that we may hear a little lag because you are talking to us from France through Skype, are you not?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, so we have, if you hear a little dead space, those who are listening, we haven't dropped off. We're just having a transatlantic Skype sound delay. Are we ready to go?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. I've looked a little bit at your webpage, and I see that Discover Paris offers, among other things, a themed entree to Black Paris walking tours, which present historical and contemporary perspectives of the Parisian Black experience. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So Entree to Black Paris is a set of tours, if you will. We do several walking tours on various themes in different areas of Paris. Each tour is approximately 2 hours long, and we visit different areas and we talk about different things. So, for example, the first and the most popular tour that I developed is called Black Paris After World War II, and we do that in the Latin Quarter in the 5th and the 6th districts, and we talk about things as varied as Josephine Baker and Stokely Carmichael and Malcolm X speaking at a facility in the Latin Quarter, to talking about Alexandre Dumas, who was a black Frenchman, 19th century character or persona, who is still the most prolific writer that France ever produced. And he's buried in the Pantheon, and that monument is part of what we see and talk about on the walk. It's just an incredible 2 hours that covers every aspect of Paris history with regard to the black presence from the 18th century to the present. And that's just one. That's our most popular walk. We have several others, one that focuses on artists, one that focuses on the interwar years, so between World War One and World War Two, and we talk a lot about the nightlife, the jazz era that grew up as a result of African American soldiers being on French soil and fighting with the French during World War One. So it's just an incredible breadth and depth of information that we give on these tours.
You know, the Parisian Black experience evokes a lot of different, very colorful mental images. What sort of mental image did you have that prompted you to establish your company?
Well, actually, my husband and I run this company together. My husband is American also. He's a white American. We both fell in love with Paris, and we started our company basically to share our love of Paris with other Anglophones, primarily Americans, but we also have clients from Great Britain and Australia, et cetera. And it was only a couple of years after we started the business that I really realized how much Black history, Black American history there is here, and how many different kinds of Black people are here. When I say kinds of Black people, I mean from different origins, from Africa, from the French Caribbean, from the Indian Ocean. And it was then that I thought, you know, this is part of what African Americans are going to want to experience, because when we travel, we always want to see Black people wherever we go. And so that was the sort of inspiration for me to investigate and slowly build the repertoire of tours that we have.
Very interesting. Before we go a little bit further, I know you have a website. Would you give our listeners, please, your contact information?
Oh, sure, happily. Okay, so we are at www.discoverparis.net. Okay, that's the home page of our website. And if you want to go to the African American page, then you would have to type in www.discoverparis.net/ African_Americans.html. But the easiest way is just to Google us, and it'll come up for sure. And that's our webpage. And then I also have a blog that's called Entree to Black Paris, and that's a Google blog. So you would type entreetoblackparis.blogspot.com.
And when we go out to that page, I think we're going to see a picture of you holding hands with a berobed statue.
That's not me.
That's not you?
No, that's not me. But you will see my photograph. My photograph is on the blog for sure.
I see you further down, I think, with some earphones on.
Yeah, I did an interview with Peter Greenberg, who was at the time, he was with NBC, now he's with CBS, the travel correspondent for he was at NBC, as I said, at that time, but now he's with CBS. And Peter, he's a great guy, and actually flattered me by inviting me to be on his radio show so that I could talk to his audience about Black Paris.
Well, what a terrific piece of exposure.
Yeah.
You talked about the periods that the history and the tours cover. Can we talk a little bit about the parallels between the Parisian Black experience and the Harlem Renaissance, perhaps?
Parallels. I wonder if parallel is actually the right word. There's definitely a connection, okay? There were many people from the Harlem Renaissance who came to Paris, who spent a great deal of time in Paris. One person that comes to mind right away is Langston Hughes. Langston Hughes came to Paris. He spent about 6 months here. He actually he came over to Europe on a ship, and he abandoned his ship so that he could come to Paris and stay. And he worked in a nightclub that turned out to be one of the most famous of the Pigalle area nightclubs in the city at that time. This was in 1924. He worked at a place called the Grand Duke, and the Grand Duke was where a Black man named Jean Bullard was the manager of the club, and Bricktop, who went on to be the queen of the night scene in Paris, was actually singing at the Grand Duke at that time. So we've got Langston Hughes, we've got people like Claude McKay, County Cullen, okay, writers who came here. We've got women too. We've got Jessie Fawcett, who was with the Crisis, the NAACP magazine. We've got Gwendolyn Bennett, who was a poet, and just so many people who came here who imbibed the spirit of Paris. Most everybody went back to the United States. There is one man who is not really considered Harlem Renaissance, but he was here during that time, Henry Ossawa Tanner from Pennsylvania, who was the quintessential African-American artist, and artists from the Harlem Renaissance period came here and sought him out. He actually never went back to the United States to live. He died here.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's an interesting question, and this is going to bring a perspective that we seldom hear, I hope, is that if you can help me to answer this question.
Okay.
For some African-Americans, Europe, much less Paris, is a faraway dream.
Mm-hmm.
How can everyday people make a Parisian adventure that's relevant, an affordable adventure?
Well, it's definitely possible, okay? And I highly, highly, highly encourage people to do this. One of the reasons that I'm in this business is because I have a passion for travel, and I have a passion for helping African Americans understand that they can travel and that they should travel to get a different perspective on what it is to be black in this world and what it is to be black in the United States. When you travel and you see the African American experience outside of the United States, and when you see other black people's experience outside of the United States, you come back home feeling a lot different, and hopefully feeling stronger and feeling just very proud of what we have accomplished as a people and what we continue to accomplish as a people. So to come to Paris, Paris is expensive, okay? I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It is expensive, but it's not inaccessible if you do your homework and you make the proper plans. So, of course, you've got to get over here. That means you're going to fly. Nobody's taking boats anymore. You're going to fly. You make sure that you get the best deals that you can. I highly recommend that you work with a travel agent, all right, because that's going to take a lot of the headache off of you. And if you want to come here and you want to experience Paris, you should plan to experience the black experience here, but you should plan to experience Paris as a whole. And the reason that I say that is because black people and black Americans, African Americans in particular, could not have thrived here if Paris was not what it was and what it is today, apart from its black populations. That's something that's very important to understand. So you come here and you embrace the city as a whole, and the black experience is a part of that whole experience. There are hotels here that are accessibly priced, from you have one star up to palace hotels here. So everybody has his or her own budget. Everybody knows what he or she can afford. All you really need to do is put the time and effort into planning, and you will be able to put together the trip that is right for you and your budget.
Okay, let me get a little bit more specific, because this was an area of interest that was expressed to me. Suppose I'm an urban middle school or even a high school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
How do I go about making this kind of adventure a meaningful reality for my students? In other words, how would I in the classroom prepare them to best appreciate such a trip?
Well, I think, there are several things that you can do. First of all, there is the aspect of tracing, or at least putting forth for your students, the big names, if you will, in African American history and contemporary life, who made Paris a part of their life, who may still actually be here. All right. So I think the best way to do that is through stories. So if you're a teacher and you're teaching history, there is a lot of history here. We can talk about the soldiers in the First World War. We can talk about the soldiers in the Second World War. We can talk about the people who came here during the Civil Rights era, people like Richard Wright, people like James Baldwin. If you are an English teacher, you can talk about the writers. You can talk about, again, about Richard Wright, about James Baldwin, about Chester Himes. If you are teaching about music, you can certainly talk about all the jazz people who have come through here, Miles Davis, Quincy Jones. You know, our history here, our presence here runs the gamut. So you can point to just about any subject that you're teaching, and you can find an example, at least one, of an African American or some other, a black person of some other nationality, who has come to Paris and done what it is that you're teaching. And tell those stories. The stories are what gets people.
And, of course, the stories match the sites.
Exactly.
Okay, let's break for 1 second, and let me ask you once again to give your contact information to our listeners.
All right. You can find us at www.discoverparis.net. If you want to send an email, send that to info@discoverparis.net.
Okay. Let's talk. I see some interesting topics on your blog. Can we talk a little bit about the myth of a colorblind France in the context of Black Paris?
Sure, certainly. So Black Paris and the myth of a colorblind France is a presentation that I actually give to people who come here. I will do that for individuals, and I'll do it for groups. I've done it for a lot of study abroad programs here. The crux of the matter is that when African-American soldiers came to Paris during the First World War, they were not allowed to fight with the Americans, all right, because the United States had its strict Jim Crow policy. So the African-American soldiers who were here during the First World War fought under the French, and they were accepted as human beings. They were accepted as equals. They went into battle. They fought valiantly. They were decorated for their service, and they went home with tales of how they were treated like men. They were not treated like dogs, like lesser individuals. They were treated like the human beings that they are. And those stories are what really put into the minds of African Americans that France was a place that was not racist, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so people came back. So there were African American soldiers who vowed to come back. There were some who really tried not to leave, even, because they just found life to be so wonderful here compared to what they were experiencing in the United States. And in actuality, all right, France has never been a colorblind society. France has never been, how should I say, I don't want to say that it's been non-racist. What I want to say is that the brand of racism that exists in France is different, and it's very complicated. It's much more complicated than our brand of racism in the United States. And so it is a myth that France is colorblind. It's very much of a myth. But African Americans, particularly those first African Americans who were here in great numbers, you know, there have been African Americans who visited Paris and visited France prior to World War I, but never in great numbers. Okay, so the soldiers were they were numerous, and they went back and they told their tales. They were not able to see the entire picture, okay? And so they went back and they said, you know, you can go to France, you can be treated like a man, nobody's going to bother you because you're black, nobody's going to stop you from walking on the sidewalk or looking at a white woman or whatever it is. People are not going to do that, okay? And that's true. But they didn't have the entire picture. And so this presentation tries to give a larger and more global viewpoint of what France, how France treats black people. And a lot of it depends upon where those black people are from. You have to remember that France was a slave nation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there were French colonies that practiced slavery. But the real difference, okay, between racism in France and racism in the United States stems from the fact that in France there never were huge numbers of black people living on French soil until the 20th century. So there weren't that many people here to worry about. Everything that happened to black people in the context of French racism, with regard to slavery and all of that, happened elsewhere, all right? In contrast, as we know, in the United States, black people built the United States. You know, the country was built upon our backs. It was built with our sweat and our blood, and we were never allowed to really come to the table until very recently in the country's history. So if you want to paint just very broad strokes, those are the two strokes that you need to remember.
Very interesting. Are there any other cogent points that you'd like to share relative to the brand of racism that's found in France as compared to that which is found in the United States?
Well, I'd like to say that France has now a significant number of black people living here. They come from Africa. Remember that France had a lot of African colonies as well as colonies in the Caribbean. And there are black people here who come from or whose I don't want to say ancestors so much as grandparents, great-grandparents, okay, I don't know if ancestor would actually be the right word for that, but in any event, they have moved here and they remember, or at least someone in their family remembers where they came from, and some of them obviously have just come here. And this period of time, this 20th century, is the time when France has now having to deal with the fact that there are lots of black people here. And so, and France is discriminating against those black people in various ways. But France has never counted its black population, just like it doesn't anymore count people based on religion either. There is no place in the census where you can mark down that you are a person of African descent. And because of that, there are no real numbers with regard to how many people of color, how many black people, how many people from North Africa, how many of those people are being denied jobs, how many of those people are being denied housing. There are no numbers because France does not keep those records, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, on the other hand, in the United States, it was very important for the government to know if you were black, even if you were 1/1000th black.
The one drop rule.
Right, exactly. You were black, according to the government, and everything else that happened to you in your life was contingent upon that. And so, again, we've got two very, very different ways of counting people. just from a census standpoint. And that also is, it's a basis for the very, very different way that France is dealing with its black population.
And
I want to say, too, that
it.
The black people here have always found it difficult to consider themselves to be one population because they are from so many different countries. They speak different languages. And they have never, until very recently, even tried to consider themselves as a single entity.
Hmm. Well, it's a difficult challenge with so many cultures and so many languages coming into play. Before we leave this topic, is there any single thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners relative to the whole myth of the whole colorblind myth in France?
I would just like to say that it is a myth, but that does not mean that you need to be afraid. It doesn't mean that when you come here you're going to be treated poorly or anything like that. The French view Americans, African Americans, white Americans, as American first. Once they determine that you are American, that is how they deal with you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're silent, and if you're silent, you may be taken for someone from somewhere else, and you may be treated in a certain way. But the minute that the person in front of you realizes that you are an American, their demeanor will change, their behavior will change. And this is also something that is very powerful because so many African Americans don't feel really American. They identify as African Americans. They don't identify as American. When they step off of American soil, they are American and they don't even realize it. And sometimes it takes someone who you don't know, their reaction to you as something that you don't see yourself as, to wake you up and say, my God, actually, I am an American. I never felt like it, you know, but here in this place and in this time, being black is secondary.
So that's how we're perceived, and we, African Americans, are perceived and dealt with as Americans rather than anything else.
That's right.
Very.
And it's a big eye-opener, and it's a shocker for a lot of people.
Very, very interesting perspective. Can we move to a subject that's a little bit lighter?
All right.
Although this one is quite interesting, I want to cover as much of your range as I can in this conversation.
Right.
You do a little bit about Afrocentric art on your blog. Can we talk about black representations in European art? You talk about having a trilingual Parisian guide who studied at the Sorbonne and at the
mm-hmm.
Louvre. Can you tell
mm-hmm.
me a little bit more about that?
Sure, happy to. So there are depictions of black people in art in European museums. And the Louvre is the quintessential museum. It's probably the most frequently visited museum in the world, I believe. And in the Louvre, there are numerous, I'm not talking just five or six, there are numerous depictions of black people in the art that is hanging on the walls of the Louvre, that is in their ancient Roman and ancient Greek section. It's incredible. And the images that you see are very relevant to the history of the time. So the Louvre has art, I think I talked about the ancient Roman and ancient Greek, so that's antiquity, up to, I guess, maybe 17th, 18th century, okay? And depending on when the paintings were done, you will see a sort of a progression of how Europeans viewed black people. And it's a fascinating, fascinating history. Now, our guide, the woman who you just referred to, she is French. And she has an in-law, I believe it's her daughter-in-law, who is African, and so she has grandchildren who are half French and half black. And she began researching these paintings and the other forms of art at the Louvre because this is now a part of her family, all right? And she does an absolutely incredible tour that takes you from the 12th century up to the late, 18th century, yes, because there are some very, very huge works, oversized works in the Louvre that focus actually on, focus is probably not the right word, that have black people as very, very central figures in the art there. And I just can't tell you enough how people, when they see that, how they're changed.
Can you make any general statement that is reasonable about how blacks or people of African descent are represented in these works of art?
Yes, I can. All right. There are several depictions of the three wise men, for example. And the three wise men, I think in America, when we see the three wise men, we generally see two white men and one black man.
Yeah.
And that is the case for several paintings in the Louvre. However, a lot of people don't know is that black wise man was only introduced into representations of the three wise men after a certain point in history. Before that, all three of the men were white. Okay? So just the fact that the three wise men, one of them changed color, says something about what is happening at that point in history. All right? And then you look at the way that the black man is portrayed. Sometimes he's very young and it's almost unreal the way that he is depicted. Other times, as you progress through history, that look will change and the features will become more Negroid, if you will. So in the first instance, it just looks like it might be a white person, but the skin is black. As you go forward, the features become more Negroid. This indicates that the painters actually have seen black people as opposed to just heard about them, okay? And so that in and of itself is something very interesting.
So at what point does that more Negroid-looking transition occur? At what point in history?
Don't quote me on this because I'm not the art expert, but I do want to say that it was around the 14th or 15th century.
14th or 15th century.
Yeah, but don't quote me on that. I would have to ask my guide.
I can understand that. It's certainly a broad topic.
Yeah, and it's a broad period in the history of the earth. I mean, it's centuries that we're talking about here.
Yes. Before we leave this topic, is there any other statement that you'd like to share with our listeners relative to these black depictions in European art?
Yeah, there are a few women that are depicted, and their depictions also vary according to the time period, but there are many more men than there are women. I encourage anybody who is coming to Paris, if you have any interest in art at all, to take this tour. It also is going to be a big eye-opener for you. And it goes to show that, you know, we have these preconceived notions about who we are and where we can be. And when you step off of U.S. soil, you find out that we are so much more than that preconceived notion, that we've been so many more places and that we've done so many more things, and that there is a different perspective, both from our viewpoint or from the black peoples of the world viewpoint and from the white peoples of the world viewpoint, about black people.
Very interesting. Now, this conversation, to my mind, would not be complete unless we talk about that most famous of African-American French residents, Josephine Baker, and the Black Pearl Walk. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about the Black Pearl Walk?
Sure. So the Black Pearl Walk is a walk that is created in honor of Josephine Baker. It features her. It's not exclusively about her, but it features her because, as you said, she is the most famous African-American who is associated with France, and she lived here for many, many, many years. Most people think of Josephine Baker as a performer, and rightly, she was a performer. But there are a lot of things about Josephine that people don't know. They don't know, for example, that she was an active member of the French Resistance. They don't know that she joined the French military as a woman in the Women's Auxiliary of the Air Force. They don't know that she was an avid, avid supporter of Charles de Gaulle. They don't know that she spoke out against racism both in France and in the United States. In fact, Josephine Baker came back from France to the United States to speak at the March on Washington. There is so much that people don't know about Josephine Baker, and I dare say that she would have never been able to achieve everything that she did in her life if she hadn't come to France. The Black Pearl Walk explores the areas where she lived and where she worked. So again, we're relating the story of Josephine Baker. Some of the highlights on the tour are the place where she was catapulted to stardom, literally overnight at the age of 19. That theater still exists. It's quite a beautiful theater. The walk takes you to that theater. The place where she, where her funeral was held. Her funeral was held in the Madeleine Church, which is a humongous church. It's not just a tiny little thing. It is a huge monument, as well as a church. It is still a working church. And I show pictures of the streets in front of that church. There was literally barely room for the funeral car to pass. That's how many people were outside the church. The church inside was packed for her funeral. There is the theater where she first performed a role that was not a savage dancer. There are all kinds of interesting tidbits of information about Josephine that we cover on this walk.
Moving on to another famous African-American resident of Paris, I once heard an interview with James Baldwin where he talked about the distance that France afforded him from his experiences as an African-American homosexual in the United States. I see that you do a walk of sites that are relevant to James Baldwin. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. So James Baldwin, he was, how shall I say, when he came to Paris, he was sort of in the shadow of Richard Wright. Richard Wright actually loaned him money, or, now is that true? In some way, Richard Wright was responsible for getting money for James Baldwin to come to Paris. I know that he did loan him money once he was here, but I think actually what he did in the on the U.S. side was to arrange for some kind of grant for Baldwin to come over. In any event, he was instrumental in getting James Baldwin over here, and James Baldwin promptly wrote an essay severely criticizing Wright's most famous work, which was Native Son. So the two had a sort of a falling out. And the walk takes you to the place where this occurred, actually. There's an area in the 6th District. It has three famous cafes, the Brasserie the Dumago and the Cafe Flore. And these cafes are, all of them, are very, very central to this Wright-Baldwin sort of feud, if you will. Some people will play that down. If you read the Wright biography by Hazel Rowley, there are some elements in there that would make it seem that it wasn't all that much of a big deal to Wright. But in any event, these two men were at loggerheads, and it was Baldwin who sort of stepped up and into Richard Wright's shoes after Wright died. So you will see on the James Baldwin walk, you will see places where he lived, you will see places where he hung out and he wrote. The Cafe Flore is also a place where he wrote. You will see places where, or you will hear me talk about places where he actually set some of his novels in. So his walk is a bit more compact than Josephine Baker walk. Josephine was all over Paris. Richard Wright was in and out of Paris, but when he was here, he spent a lot of time in one particular area. And that walk is actually, it's a newer walk. It's not one that I've done very often, but I actually created it for James Baldwin scholars who come here and who are looking to walk in the steps of James Baldwin. That doesn't mean that other people can't take the walk. It's quite fine for everybody. I'm just trying to explain the impetus for me to create it.
So does Richard Wright's walk expand upon his history prior to Baldwin's arrival, and does it enlighten us any further about the relationship between Baldwin and Wright?
There is a section of the walk that I do called Black Paris After World War II, and also I do a separate walk called the Richard Wright Walk. Both of those do talk about Wright and Baldwin, but really from the point of view of Baldwin being a correspondent of sorts for the 1956 Congress of Negro Writers and Artists. So Richard Wright was the head of a delegation for that Congress, and Baldwin was not a part of that delegation. He simply reported on it. And I tell the story about what James Baldwin observed during this Congress and how he observed and how he described Richard Wright's demeanor with regard to the African delegation and the African American delegation, and how Wright was really torn between the two, and how he sort of, I don't want to say came apart, but when it was time for him to give his final speech, he really didn't know what to say because he had heard so much prior to his time at the podium. He had already been to Africa. He was not really that impressed with what he saw in Africa. He was viewed by the African delegation as somebody who was going to be a bridge between Africa and the United States, but his heart wasn't really in it. And Wright, he was unable to, he had written a speech, and when he finally got up to the podium, he said, you know, I just feel like what I wrote, I can't really, I don't feel comfortable about it anymore. And so he just sort of ad-libbed, if you will, his presentation. And Baldwin is very, very explicit about that in a book that is available called The Price of the Ticket.
The Price of the Ticket.
And there is, yes. And The Price of the Ticket by James Baldwin. And there's a chapter in there that he devotes completely to this Congress, and it is just fascinating reading.
We do have a little bit of time left.
Okay.
And once again, I'm going to ask you to tell our latecomers your contact information so we can make sure that everyone has it.
Great. Okay, our website is www.discoverparis.net. And if you want to write to me at info@discoverparis.net.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to leave this final segment of this conversation kind of free form. I'd like to know what you feel is the most important thing that you have to talk about that we have not covered already in this conversation.
Okay, well, I guess what I would like to talk about is how people who want to come in and have this experience, how they should go about it. It is really impossible, unless you have done an extreme amount of research, it is really impossible for you to come here and find the African-American presence. One of the things that people always ask me is there a museum where we can go and we can see we can see documents and we can see photographs and paintings, et cetera, about the African-American experience here? The answer is no. The African-American presence is hidden. It's in the spirit of the city, but very, very few physical items, physical traces are here. And so in order to find those things, either you have to do an incredible amount of research or you have to use a company such as Discover Paris to point those things out to you to plan a trip that's going to fulfill that need for you. And so, you know, I want people to be encouraged to contact me if they are interested in having that kind of experience. Really, you need to have a professional organize your trip for you. So that is, it may sound, you know, self-promotional. It is self-promotional, but it also is very, very true. So that's one thing that I want to make clear. And there are all kinds of ways that you can do this. We offer, as you talked about earlier, we offer guided tours. We also offer self-guided tours. And we offer various other kinds of activities. So the visit to the Louvre, for example, that would be one. The presentation that I give called Black Paris and the Myth of a Colorblind France, that would be another. Because in that presentation, I talk about, I show you in the presentation those few physical traces that are here. I talk about the myth of the colorblind France. And then I talk about contemporary Black Paris. France has had several Miss Frances, for example, who are of African descent. France had a Black woman sing the French national anthem for the 200th anniversary of the French Revolution. There are all kinds of things like that, little tidbits of information that only a professional can share with you. So I really encourage people, if they're interested, to contact me at info@discoverparis.net and let me know of your interest. We do have a questionnaire that I can point you to fill out so that you can tell me, you know, exactly where your interests lie. Are you interested in history? Are you interested in music? Are you interested in art? Are you interested in all of the above? Then, of course, there is the culinary experience here. I do write on my blog, I write art and food pairing articles where I will talk about a place where you can go and see Afrocentric art and then you can go and have an Afrocentric meal. So
Hi.
There are all kinds. Hello?
Hello, this is Leslie. I'm sorry, I just had to get this question. I was itching to ask it. Could you talk about the connection between the Statue of Liberty and in France?
The connection between the Statue of Liberty and France. Okay. So the French, first of all, the Statue of Liberty was created by a French man. The person who designed it was a French man. It was rumored that he modeled the Statue of Liberty on a Black woman. That has proven to be a myth, but it's a very interesting story because he actually went to the United States to sort of drum up interest in the statue. And he was commissioned to do it by another French man who wanted to make a gift from France to the United States to honor the Declaration of Independence and the whole concept that the United States was built on of freedom. Okay, so it's a very complicated story. It turns out that the money that was raised for the statue, a lot of it came from the U.S., and a lot of it came from the pockets of black people, all right? But a whole myth grew up around the Statue of Liberty. People thought that it was created to honor African-American soldiers in the, excuse me, during the Civil War. There are all kinds of things that sprang up with regard to this statue, and most of them have turned out not to be true. There is a model of the Statue of Liberty in the Luxembourg Garden in Paris. There's also another model in a museum here, and there is a huge model on a little island in the middle of the Seine. So if people want to see the Statue of Liberty, they can not only see it in New York, they can also come to France, and they can see it here as well. There's also the torch of the Statue of Liberty that is at the entrance of the tunnel where Princess Diana and Dodi took that fatal car ride. And that statue for the longest time, or the torch, for the longest time was a shrine for Di and Dodi. So there's a lot of, it's just very complicated, the story of the Statue of Liberty in France.
It sounds like it. Leslie, are you still on the line? I guess she's gone.
Okay.
Anything else that we haven't covered that you consider an important point to communicate before we go?
Yes, I would like to say that when you plan your trip, I don't want you to be intimidated because people speak French here. There are a lot of people here who speak English at least a little bit and who are going to be willing to try to speak English to you if you just acknowledge the fact that you are in France by saying to them bonjour first, all right, and not speaking loudly because you think that if you speak more loudly, they're going to finally understand you. Okay, those are the things that turn people off, and that's why Americans think that French people don't like Americans. That's not true. It's really not true. French people may not like American government, and actually that's changed quite a bit since Obama became president, but French people will separate American government, American governmental policy from the American people. So come here, don't be afraid that you're going to be snubbed because you're an American. You just need to know some, you know, very basic etiquette, and you'll be fine. Be sure that you bring walking shoes because the best way to experience this city is by walking. This is why I have spent so much time developing walking tours. Really, Paris is best experienced by walking. I mean, it's just palpable what you get when you walk the streets of this city. So I highly encourage you to come. Don't be afraid of the people. Be ready to try your French, however poor your accent is, and be ready to walk. This is how you're going to get the best experience possible from your trip.
Well, having been to France, but not to Paris, with my poor French, and having been treated well in other places, even with my poor accent, I believe that what you say is true because I've experienced it. I want to tell you that after having spoken to you, I just can't wait to get to Paris.
Oh,
it's
good.
Very high on my list of things to do. And as an African-American, of course, African-American Paris is very interesting to me, especially the literature and performing arts aspects. So
fantastic.
You are going to be getting an email or a call from me just as soon as I am ready to plan my visit
Fantastic.
To France. And once again, please give me your contact information so that other people can call and write you too.
Very good. Okay, our website is www.discoverparis.net, and you can write to me at info@discoverparis.net. It's .net, okay, not .com.
Super. Anything else we need to cover before we sign off? It's been such a pleasure having you that I hate to end the conversation. So if you have anything else that you'd like to discuss, I'm all ears, and I'm sure our listeners are too.
Well, I think I've just about covered it. I just want to say again that the African-American experience here is real. It is deep. It is long. Our history here is long. We have over 200 years of history here, okay? Again, if you want to experience it, it's just not out there for everybody to see. You really have to either do an incredible amount of research on your own, or you need to have a professional service that knows what they're talking about, arrange your trip for you. I do encourage you, as much as I love the African-American experience here, I do encourage you to see Paris as a whole. Paris is not just the African-American experience here. Paris is Paris. And we couldn't have come here and thrived here if Paris were not what it was and what it is in and of itself. So come here ready to embrace Paris as well as investigate our time here.
Well, thank you, Monique, for being on our show. It sounds like Discover Paris has just a wonderful service that can give a gestalt view of Paris from the holistic view and from the African-American view. As I said, I, for one, can't wait to get there and go out touring and walking with you. And I thank
Terrific.
You very much for being on our show tonight.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Just in case people didn't know, it is almost 1 a.m. here. So I stayed up especially for you, and I'm so glad that you invited me. And I'm happy to come back if you'd like for me to talk about this again at another time.
We'd love to have you back very soon. Thank you so much for staying up with us tonight. Again, our guest was Monique Wells of Discover Paris. And this is Michelle Ridley-Cook, your host for tonight on the Gist of Freedom blog radio show. Thank you for tuning in, and good night.
Good night.